Hi, I'm Kaylee Moore.
And I'm Emma Samasco.
Welcome to Freelance Writing Coach, your go-to podcast for building a freelance writing business.
In each 20-minute episode, we'll do a deep dive into one area of business with the hope that our insights as successful freelance writers will educate and inspire you.
When I'm writing, there's a lot that can throw me off my writing groove. Whether it's searching for the outline and research or self-editing, the distractions that pop up left and right, anonymous elephants peering at me in the dock, strike-throughs and rogue edits before I'm ready, it can be pretty chaotic.
But Kaylee, what if you could take control of the process and complete assignments 50% faster? I am really excited because ButterDocs is writing software built for writers who want the most productive writing processes possible, which of course we do.
Of course.
So freelance writing coach listeners can try this out. We are so excited about it. We tried it ourselves and highly recommend it. You can get started for free at butterdocs.com/FWC. That's butterdocs.com/FWC. In this episode, we're going to talk about being a freelance writer when you're off the clock. So you may define yourself as a freelance writer, as your sort of work identity, but how do you explain that work identity to those around you and your personal life? How do you spend your time when you're off the clock? And how does kind of the professional identity of a freelance writer affect or not affect how you show up in your world? So we're going to talk about that today. And we're also going to talk a little bit about what we're doing outside of work in 2024 and what we're thinking about as freelance writers and as people. So Kaylee, why don't we start with you? Like, will you tell me if you were at a family reunion and someone said, oh, Kaylee, what are you doing for work? How do you answer that question?
It's so funny because I just had an experience this week, like 2 days ago, where this happened. And it wasn't at a family gathering. It was at my dentist. So I'm sitting there in the dentist chair and my dentist is like, hey, I follow you on LinkedIn and I was looking at your stuff. And what do you do? I couldn't really understand. And I was like, LOL, this is my life. Because I've been doing this for 10 years now and I cannot tell you how many times I've had this conversation. And I still am not good at explaining it. So what I always typically say, and again, this doesn't always translate super well to like layman's terms, to people who are outside the software space. I just try to say something to the extent of, I'm a writer. I work with marketing teams at software companies. I help them write articles and educate their customers and help them rank better in Google search results, which again, a lot of that still, as I'm saying it, I'm like, yeah, if you don't know what that means, then you're probably just like, what?
Well, maybe even it sounds random for all those things to be related and put together in the same bucket.
Yeah. And so he was just kind of like, okay. But then sometimes I default to the easier to grasp thing, which is like, I do retail reporting a little bit for publications like Forbes, Folk Business, places like that. And then they're like, oh, but the dilemma with that is it's so little of what I do that I hate to default to that because that's not what pays my bills in any shape or form. It's just kind of an extra thing that I do on the side. It's just the easier thing to grasp. And I'll be honest, it's the ego thing too. Like it feels good to be like, oh, I write for this publication, you know, right? It clicks in and it seems prestigious to some people. Other people are like, LOL. Depends on who you're talking to, but it's definitely the easier thing to understand. So I've tried versions of that. That's the short version. I want to hear how you tackle it because what we do is similar but different. So I'm also looking for ideas.
Well, I'm not sure I have a perfect answer either. So I feel like when I talk about it, it sort of depends a little bit on the audience. A lot of times I just tell people I'm a marketing consultant. A lot of times I say I'm a marketing writer. Sometimes I say freelance writer, but not usually. But like in my life, a marketing writer, a marketing consultant are common terms that I use. And if someone doesn't really care and they're just sort of asking out of politeness, like they're okay with that answer. And they're like, okay. And if they want to know more, they might ask like, oh, like what type of marketing do you do? And I might say, oh, well, I'm a writer and I mostly write educational content, or I mostly write educational stuff for companies. I usually say tech companies. So I don't even say software companies. I say tech companies. So I might say something like, I'm a marketing consultant for tech companies, or I'm a marketing writer for tech companies. And they're like, oh, what kind of work do you do? And depending on how up they are on sort of our field and industry, there's more, I try to gauge where that person is to give them whatever information. So I find that case studies are something that are really easy for people to grasp. So I'll say like, they might say, what's an example of something that you write? And I'm like, well, I interview my customers or my clients' customers to get an understanding of how they're using that product. And I put it together as a story that the sales team can then use. And they can often grasp that kind of thing. Yeah, it so depends on the audience. Like I think that marketing writer for tech companies would just be like gobbledygook to like my uncle, you know? But it's also like, that's kind of accurate. And like, well, I'm a marketing writer. Like I write stuff for marketing. And like, I will really simplify it for people where I'm like, you know, when you open your email and there's like loads of emails in there from like all the brands that you signed up a newsletter from, that's the kind of stuff I write. And like, I don't write email newsletters. I don't write for retailers. Like, I'm not writing for Bass Pro Shop, which my uncle is like subscribed to, but like, it's all the same world of stuff. And that allows them to be like, oh, I get it. So I try and find something that they can kind of grasp.
Yes, it's very conditional. Like you kind of have to analyze what's going to connect here and then take your best stab at it.
Yeah. And I mean, I do want to clarify that in these situations we're talking about, I think like I'm not making a pitch. You know, the way that I might talk about what I do if I went to like a software conference or a content marketing conference, I think is totally different. And I may orient how I position myself as more of a pitch, right? Like, oh, I write case studies for companies like yours. This is totally different. This is more just like trying to give the dentist a casual answer that doesn't turn into like a 45-minute conversation.
What do you think about, and you know, we talked about having a whole episode about this, but what do you think about using the term freelance writer? Do you think that it has a negative connotation, or do you feel comfortable using that?
Yeah, I think it has a negative connotation, and it's something I struggle with because obviously we have this podcast that is like the Freelance Writing Coach podcast. I obviously like believe in the term. I believe in freelance writers and what we do. I also believe in like elevating that term. So saying like, no, freelance writing is a legitimate career. Like this is not just bopping around.
Yeah. Or like a stopgap to fill in some time while you're between jobs. I think it has sometimes a lot of those people associate like, oh, you don't have a job.
Especially.
Because you're freelance.
Especially in motherhood.
Yes. It's like, oh, this is your hobby. There's sometimes that implication.
And even before I was a parent, I just kind of shied away from using the term freelance writer, which I don't know if that's the right choice, Kaylee. Like now that I really go back and forth on this because I do identify as a freelance writer. And yet I'm not sure it's the best way to describe what I do when I'm out and about with people that have no idea.
Marketing consultant, I think, is a much better fit for those scenarios. Are we freelance writers? Is that true? Yes. But because of people's associations and that being such a broad spectrum across, depending on who you're speaking with, again, it's very situational. It's very like context driven, which one you go with, I feel like.
Do you ever talk about this podcast with people that like aren't in the world of freelance writing or content marketing?
The time it comes up most often is when I'm doing speaking engagements. People will often be like, oh, you have a podcast, what's it about? And then it opens the door to that conversation. But otherwise, not a whole lot. It just doesn't really come up because, again, I'm trying to keep it as simple as possible instead of adding the various things that I do, which make it confusing.
Yeah, I ask because I actually think that like the podcast is something that's really easy for people to grasp. So sometimes it'd be like, oh, I'm a marketing consultant, and I leave it at that. And they're like, oh, what do you do? And I'm like, well, I'm a writer. I write for tech companies. And if the conversation goes a little bit more in depth, I might say, oh, I also have a podcast for freelance writers. And then I sort of start using the term freelance writers or whatever. And I found that people are super interested in the podcast. Like my friends that have really honestly like no stake in the game for freelance writing listen to our podcast because they're just curious about hearing what we have to say. And I'm not saying like, oh my gosh, we're so amazing. Everyone, random people are listening to us. But I do think that that's where there's sort of the potential to elevate what we're saying, right? Like I think, or like what the term freelance writer, like if people come to this podcast and they don't necessarily know that much about freelance writing, but they're maybe interested in it or they're interested in us. But I do think for whatever reason, the podcast is something that's easy for people to grasp.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I also want to shift gears a little bit. And we did one of these episodes last season where we just kind of caught up on what's happening in our lives outside of work. But because we're talking about how we explain what we do in a day-to-day living context, I guess I use that word 14,000 times every time we speak. But what is happening in your life since we last chatted? What's new? What are you reading? What are you working on? What are you excited about for this year?
Yeah. So it's the year of Emma this year. It's been officially declared. My daughter turned one in January of 2024. And I was like, I'm going to take my life back. It's not like I'm holding the reins of this show now. The past year was kind of survival with my littlest being so young. I was working most of the year, but it was just a shit show, honestly. So I have some health and fitness goals. I have shopping and spending goals where I'm basically not buying any clothing or cosmetics for myself or my children until April 1st, sort of as an experiment. And because I feel like I've been on this kind of hamster wheel of consumption, like if I have only the right hair product, I'll have different hair kind of thing, which I think we can all fall into. I've been listening to a few new podcasts. One is Culture Study by Anne Helen Peterson. I don't know if you've read her stuff or she's so fascinating. I'm sure you would love her. I think it's a relatively new podcast because there were only like 5 or 6 episodes and they basically talk about like some kind of culture phenomena, but they're millennials. It's Anne Helen Peterson and she'll have a guest. And the guests are usually journalists. So they did like an episode on the Mean Girls reboot. They did an episode on why do clothes suck so much now, which you would find really interesting. And it's about sort of like how clothes are manufactured and how we think about clothing today versus like how we use. It's very, very good. So I've been listening to that. I have not been reading as much as I like. Usually I read every night before I go to bed, but I've been just so wiped out. I do have a couple books to recommend to you and maybe whoever is listening. I read, like, I think in 2023, the best book I read all year was a book called After the Parade, which was just like an extremely beautiful book worth putting on your list. I also read a book that you recommended, Kaylee. What was that book about the woman who like lived in the house full of bees?
Oh, Big Swiss.
Yes. I read Big Swiss on your recommendation, which was also a very enjoyable and fun read.
Again, not for everyone. Full disclaimer, not for everyone.
It's only if you're into like weird darks, like weird sort of
female led.
Yeah.
A little strange, a little disconcerting at times. I don't know. It's a big genre. There's a lot of people I put in that bucket, like Otessa Moshfegh.
Yeah, it's totally, if you like Otessa, you'll like this book. I think it's actually a lot like Otessa, but less depraved.
Yes. Oh, that's perfect description.
Yeah. There's another book I read. This might have been in 2022, but I'm looking at it on my bookshelf that is kind of in this genre that's also very good. And it's called Very Cold People by Sarah Manguso. It's really good. It's set in Massachusetts, which is where I grew up. And I just can sort of feel the setting of that book coming through. So that is another one that I'd recommend. And currently I'm reading Jhumpa Lahiri's Roman Stories. And I love Jhumpa Lahiri's early work and short stories. And this one, while it's very well written, it's also a bit like highbrow and kind of intellectual in a way that I'm like not super into. But that's kind of what I've been reading, listening to. I'll get into what I'm watching after you go. But why don't you talk a little bit about what you've been up to? First, like, what are you sort of generally up to? And then maybe you can go into watching, reading, et cetera.
Yes. So generally, I'm like you, but in a different way. I don't have any children, but the past 6 months have been pretty rough in my life. Personal health, I feel like I've gotten every possible sickness. I had influenza A over Christmas. Just a lot of deprogramming. I think I'm turning 35 in a few weeks, and I think I'm just at this phase in my life where the first half of my life, I was very malleable. I was very chameleon. I was very adaptable. And now I'm like, I don't think I want to do that anymore. I think I want to be who I am because it's the person I choose, not what everybody else tells me to be. So I've done a lot of pushing on the walls of my life, metaphorically, that I've built for myself. And that's been a lot of heavy lifting. That's the very, very Cliff's Notes version of that.
Kaylee, can I ask, are you sort of saying that you're trying to not be the person others want you to be?
Yeah, I think I've always just had that chameleon quality that I talked about, where depending on who I'm with, I will be whatever they want me to be. And I am not comfortable with that anymore. I think I have a pretty clear idea of who I am as an individual now and who I want to be moving forward. So instead of being so adaptable and just, again, malleable, like basically I'll be whoever I'm around, I'm like, no, I know who I am and what I like, and I need to stop doing that. So like I said, it's a lot of deprogramming, a lot of therapy, a lot of reading and being curious. And it's been helpful, but it's been exhausting.
It sounds very Taylor Swift as you talk about it, of like owning who you are, and that it's actually more powerful to be who you are and own that than just kind of, I don't know. I mean, Taylor Swift talks about that, I think.
She could write 1 million songs about my life right now. That is without question. So that's the personal side. I was working on my novel. Again, I've put it down just because, like I said, I'm tired. I feel like I ran out of creative juice because I've spent my energy in all these other areas of my life lately, which is fine. It's just a season that I'm in. Reading wise, I've read a couple of really good books. I've been very self-help focused as part of that process. So I read It's On Me by the Millennial Therapist, which I don't love that that's how she identifies on Instagram, but I get it. It's a sticky name. It makes sense. It's easy to understand. I read her book, but then I also read a really funny memoir by Maria Bamford called Sure, I'll Join Your Cult. And I listened to the audiobook of that one. She's a comedian. It was wildly entertaining and weird. Made me laugh a lot. My favorite book of last year was Wellness by Nathan Hill. So he also is the author of that book, The Nix, if you saw that.
I've read that. And Wellness is actually on my list at the library right now.
It's a thick one. It's a big commitment, but the payoff was worth it. And I just was so impressed. It has that like Jonathan Franzen.
Sprawling and multi-generational.
Yes.
Ambitious.
Yes. Very ambitious book. Big, big book. I think it took him 7 years to write.
Oh my gosh. Well, then if you put down your novel for a little while, so be it.
Yeah, I'm just trying not to beat myself up over it, because I don't, even if I did try to force it, the writing would be shitty. So
I'm going to buy it because I just have a digital copy on reserve. But you saying this, I think I'm going to buy the hard copy.
I really, really enjoyed it. There are parts of it that are a little bit tedious, but I think that that's true with any of those types of book. And again, it's just another thread that gets tied in at the end. If you can make it through, again, it's testing the reader a little bit of like, how ambitious are you to finish this? You get the payoff at the end. So I really did like that. So yeah, that's kind of the short version of the TLDR of my life right now.
Are you watching anything on TV?
So I'm rewatching Mad Men. I'm almost done, just because it's so beautiful, not because I admire the characters or anything like that. I just think it's such a beautifully shot show with some really good writing. I just finished the latest season of Fargo, which was very, very good, also starring Jon Hamm. And I am now watching the latest season of True Detective, which has Jodie Foster in it. It's pretty grim. But so far, so good.
I didn't know True Detective was even still on.
Oh, yeah. They're still kicking. I haven't watched every season, but I really like Jodie Foster. So I was like, all right, I'll I'll give another try.
Every season is like a different cast and mystery, right? I think we watched the first season, which was very good. And then the second season, it didn't happen for us.
Yeah, I think that was how I felt too. I really liked season one. And then again, based on the strength of Jodie Foster, I'm like, all right, I'll give this another try.
I'm curious to hear how you like it when it's all through.
It's only two episodes in, so it's still early, and it's a weekly release, so I cannot binge it. What about you?
Well, my husband has been rewatching The OC.
Ooh, what a good one. What a fun time.
And I was not into The OC when I was in high school. When I look back, I think it was because I thought I was, like, too cool for it.
Me too! Oh.
You too?
Yes. I didn't watch any of those shows.
Me neither.
No, don't tell me what to do.
Wow, Kelly, I didn't know we had this in common, because I feel like I'm the only one who was like, yeah. They always kind of made me feel bad about myself because I was a teenager at that time and their depictions of teenage life were like, everybody was so beautiful and they all had boys that liked them and everything was so perfect.
Yes. Everyone's hot. Like, everyone's living their dream life.
And charming. Everybody's charming. And of course, the cast is all older than like us.
Yes, there are adult people playing teenagers, which is...
So all that I was very sensitive to. And I felt it was inauthentic and it offended my sensibilities. But anyway, my husband was into it as well as everybody else. And he was actually a little older. He was in college. So I think he was less... Well, I think he's also just... I don't think it would have bothered him in high school either. But he's been rewatching it and it has so many episodes. So I've seen many, 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 many of them. And like, I feel like in rewatching it with him, I realized that even though I wasn't into it back then, I still saw a lot of it. Like it eeped into my psyche. My sister was visiting when Chris was watching it and she watched it. And she was like, I was like, what was I doing when you were watching it? And she was like, I don't know. I think it was just your computer time.
Computer time.
Which is hilarious. But anyway, so it's sort of, it holds up more than you think it would.
Well, yeah, it's a teenage soap opera. And watching it now as an adult, it's kind of enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I can sort of appreciate it now. And like the characters like Misha Barton's character, Marissa Cooper, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, she's 9, blah, blah. And then I watched it now and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have like so much empathy for this character. Like poor Marissa. Like I just saw it so different. And it's like a 20-year-old show, Kaylee.
I know. I don't want to talk about it.
So that we've been watching, and because it has so many episodes and is taking up like all of my husband's evenings, I have not really watched anything else of note.
Okay. That's a big commitment. Once you get started, you are in. You are locked in.
I don't think I've seen something else on TV in 2024.
Well, it's just, you're in that phase. You're in the OC phase. Everybody has one. Even if it didn't happen when the show first came out, everybody, I feel like that's one of those shows that people go back to and they're like, I'm going to watch all of it.
Well, maybe Mad Men too. I only watched like the final. I honestly was not into TV as a young person at all. And I only got into TV when I met my husband because he's a TV person. And then he would have me sit down and watch things with him. And I was like, oh, this is actually good. Like, this is why people like these shows. I just was never interested in it myself. But now I would call myself a TV person. But I think that if it wasn't for him, it would be hard for me to just like spin up something and watch on my own. I didn't even watch every episode of The Office until like him and I were married. Like I would see episodes here and there. I thought the show was like hilarious, but I never like followed the whole path. Like I think it's maybe like my ADHD. Like I could not like focus on it. I was like, oh yeah, that's funny. Like there's a bird over there.
I'm going to go do a painting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Computer time, as my sister would say.
Computer time. Yes. Yeah, what are you looking forward to this year as kind of a closing note to round out this very tangential conversation?
Well, I don't know. I'm looking forward to the year of Emma and reclaiming myself and however that sort of comes to pass. What about you?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like I'm just surviving. That's my knee-jerk reaction. I'm not surviving. My life is good. I have no complaints. It's just been very heavy. So I would like... I am hoping that the future has a lot of travel for me this year, which is more of the same, just continuing that path because it brings me joy. And I don't know. I think I'm in a period of evolution when it comes to the work that I'm doing. Because freelance writing is changing, and we've talked about that in a previous episode, I'm having to figure out what's my next pivot, what's next for me, how am I going to package my offerings moving forward. So just figuring out what the next however many years will be, especially after having this 10-year benchmark moment, I guess. I'm just, you know, like, what's next? Do I want to keep doing this? Do I want to go in-house? Do I want to take a contract role where I work with one client instead of many clients? I don't know. So figuring that out.
Yeah, it sounds like, have you heard of this metaphor of like, this is your chrysalis stage?
Yes.
I think that's from Tara Moore, who has like a book. I think it's called Playing Big. And even the title intimidates me. It's sort of about how women like keep themselves small, but like, and they should play big. But I'm in a place right now where I don't think it'd be a good thing for me to read. But I know she has this concept called like the chrysalis stage, which is like, that is a time of life where you're sort of becoming, or you're, I don't know. So that it sounds a little bit to me like you're maybe in a chrysalis stage where it's very challenging, but you're kind of trying to figure out how you're going to grow and what you're going to grow into, which is a beautiful thing.
So yeah, lots of good things for both of us on the horizon, hopefully for our listeners too. But yeah, just a nice little update.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Freelance Writing Coach podcast.
If you want more tips, tricks, and resources for building your business, visit freelancewritingcoachpodcast.com.